Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi?
Sci-Fi.
Yes, Sci-Fi, Sci-Fi, Sci-Fi. A podcast in which three random guys read audiobooks of a science fictional or fantastical nature and tell you what we think of them and then come back and discuss them. Today, we are giving that treatment to The Book of the Unnamed Midwife by Meg Ellison. Kevin, is this your choice?
It is indeed.
That sounds very cult-like. Kevin, is this your choice?
It is my choice.
Do you give consent?
I wouldn't go that far.
Okay. Kevin, could you give us a reading of the back of the book, please?
Indeed. Philip K. Dick Award winner for Distinguished Science Fiction.
Well, that's all we need to know. That's that's kind of a weird plot.
Yes, for a lot. Well, so are most of Philip K. Dick's books.
Exactly. The story of an award being given to a person.
It's very meta.
You're not Philip K. Dick.
How can you be sure?
That's why every author should write about an award named after themselves. Just in case there's an award that becomes named after themselves.
I really need to take more JJ 180.
You're still on it, Barry.
I need to take more.
And less.
At the same time.
When she fell asleep, the world was doomed. When she awoke, it was dead. In the wake of a fever that decimated the Earth's population, killing women and children and making childbirth deadly for the mother and infant, the midwife must pick her way through the bones of the world she once knew to find her place in this dangerous new one. Gone are the pillars of civilization. All that remains is power and the strong who possess it. A few women like her survived, though they are scarce. Even fewer are safe from the clans of men who, driven by fear, seek to control those remaining. To preserve her freedom, she dons men's clothing, goes by false names, and avoids as many people as possible. But as the world continues to grapple with its terrible circumstances, she'll discover a role greater than chasing a pale imitation of independence. After all, if humanity is to be reborn, someone must be its guide.
All right. Well, what did everybody think? Barry?
I really liked it. I do have a nitpick with the back of the book.
With the back of the book?
Yes. Okay. Not with the book itself, with the back of the book.
Okay.
They use the word decimation improperly.
Yes, I thought about that as I was reading.
Of course, because we are horrible, horrible human beings.
Well, yeah, that's my function
on
the planet.
At least 1 in 10 of us are.
Yes, amusingly.
The other 90% definitely are.
I was going to say, I saw something recently on Twitter. They were talking about the number of people who would potentially lose their health care. And they said, hey, good news, grammarians. You can actually use decimate correctly because that is 1/10 of the population of the U.S.
Go forth and use it now. You'll be right for once.
So you were going to say that.
Yes.
I mean, good thing you did.
Well, you gave me a dirty look, so I thought I would say it anyway.
All right. Kevin, what do you think?
I enjoyed it quite a bit, which is a positive review for people who don't know me.
I don't understand. What have you done with Kevin?
Yes, he made a coherent and complete statement.
He made words.
Words. Yes. Words good. Words good. Anything else?
Probably.
Okay, great. I also enjoyed this book. I liked reading it as kind of a reaction to the run-of-the-mill cozy catastrophe, or I don't know what the American equivalent of the cozy catastrophe. I think it would be the kick-ass catastrophe where, you know, civilization falls and that means that you have to reluctantly step up and be a real man.
Yeah, that's basically the most of the American versions are.
Channel your inner John Wayne.
The government's going to come get my gun, so I'm going to show you that's not going to happen.
Right, exactly.
But there's not enough government left to take your gun.
Exactly.
No, it's usually the secret government that steps in and takes over the real government, and then they have to step up and show that they're real Americans by keeping the true government going or whatever. So,
right. And it's sort of the heroes of all of those books that are the villains in this story.
Yeah, my main response to this as far as it being like not 100% positive of a review is, wow, people are basically 99% of the men in here are really horrible people. And I'm thinking, I like to think that I wouldn't react that way. Meaning like, hey, all the men's basically just, you know, the men's are just going to get together in a big gang and get all the women's, you know, to be their sex slaves. And that's all that happens. And like, I'm like, I think that some people would react that way. I'd like to think I wouldn't react that way. But sadly, probably that would actually happen. So it's like, yeah, I guess maybe that would be something that you'd have to be terrified of happening.
Well, I'm feeling the first symptoms of a fever that can only be cured by our discussion section or the utter end of the world. So
you know which one I'm rooting for.
Both if we're lucky.
Both if we're lucky. So we shall return, or not, for we are sci-fi.
Sci-fi?
Sci-fi.
And welcome back to our discussion section, where, as usual, we're going to discuss things until the symptoms are too powerful for us to continue. I guess we can start out with, do we have any favorite or most outstanding scenes?
I actually like the one of the early scenes in the book where she basically recovers from the plague or whatever it is, the disease. And her first, you know, thing is to start to go out and start exploring San Francisco again. Mm-hmm. And she runs across the two gay guys that basically like leave her high and dry. And I was like, yeah, I guess this is an equal opportunity moment to be a dick.
Yes. They basically were like, yeah, we don't need to deal with this. Those guys would have, you know, basically, you know, one of the roving gangs of men, as is the norm in the book, like comes by and finds her. And they're just like, hey, woman, and, you know, just sort of chase after her. And that's when she, like, at the very beginning of the book has a framing sort of like Canticle for Leibowitz or something, where it's like, oh, look, here's some journals and we're going to come back. And then the next thing I thought of was, oh, it's like the beginning of Walking Dead, you know, where she wakes up in a hospital. And it's like, what's going on? You know, walks outside. Oh, everyone's dead, but I guess they're not zombies in this case.
They're worse. They're evil.
They're men.
Right. And also in that show, usually that's the big problem too, is, you know, bad people's not the zombies.
Like, right. You know? At least so, the zombies have, like, you know, intentional.
Right. That's just how they are. But yeah, that's like I was saying, that's the one thing that I think is probably unfortunately realistic. And I had kind of the knee jerk, like, but I wouldn't be part of a rape gang kind of reaction. Like, well, where are the geeky characters in here that are men? Like,
dead.
Yeah, probably. So
he'd be in the first wave.
Well, they ran into him at the very, very end of the book. Right.
And right.
But that was about the only
one. I'm engaging in a certain amount of dark humor here.
Yes.
This is somewhat of an unusual apocalypse in that it affected women more, which means that women are now the more valued resource, and it's sort of a speculation on one of the problems of being a valued resource is you become treated as a valued resource.
Well, sure. I mean, the obvious one is A Handmaid's Tale.
Sure.
And it's not quite as, you know, it's not a plague that kills everybody, so there's still a lot of men around. It's not just a few lingering. And the same thing with that other book that I can't freaking remember. Sorry.
So the other book I was thinking of was Seven Eves, which was, you know, where right. They kind of had some time to plan out who was going to be going out into space. But, you know, at some point in the book, they're like, well, you know, since we have all this genetic engineering, all we really needed was, you know, a bunch of guys to be, you know, depositing semen in sample cups, and we could have pretty much gotten rid of most of you.
Right. 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 So the other book is Children of Men, right, where it's kind of a similar to Handmaid's Tale. And so, yeah, I guess it's not an unheard of theme as far as the apocalypse, but it's definitely one of the more, enlightened versions of it as far as, you know, women centric, I guess, you know, or women's points of view of things.
Sure.
It's also much more, I felt it was like a much more drastic one, right? Cause 99% of the planet died off. As opposed right. to, you know, most apocalyptic books you see, it's closer to like 10% survive or something like that.
Right. And so that was the one thing I actually liked about it was, you know, it definitely explores the sort of loneliness aspect to some degree. And, you know, just like you said, usually there's enough people that, you know, you pretty quickly find somebody, whereas it's like days between, you know, stumbling across somebody else. And then they're usually like, get the hell out of here, I don't trust anybody. Or they just shoot at you, you know, try to kill you and or put you part in their gang or something. Like,
my gun's bigger than yours, leave.
Right. So we did have a, you know, a stream of anecdotes of that kind of stuff. And, you know, where they run into a few different arrangements. You know, most of them are just, you know, sort of the bad men doing bad things. There's a few examples of, you know, the hive, where there's like the queen bee and she has her worker bees.
Now, that was, to me, that was one of my favorite scenes, because it kind of showed it from the story at that point was being told by the Mormon guy's perspective.
Honus.
Yes. Yeah. And he was trying, and that gave it this sort of terrifying alien quality where, you know, this voice is calling out in the nighttime, where's my boys? I want to see my pretty boys.
Right. Yeah.
And you're like, what the hell is going on? And then from their perspective, they're like being lured into this horrible den of sin.
Right. Because, you know, they're LDS. Right. And right. So they're just like, oh God, we can't drink. We can't smoke. You know, we definitely can't, you know, see naked women's and stuff like that. Or in this case, like, you know, kind of like multi whatever men, the men were sleeping with each other, the men, the women and everything. And it was crazy. It was this big, you know, orgy and oh my God, you know, it's like the end of the world.
And drugs.
And it was the end of the world.
And it was sort of interesting because only after the fact did I sort of realize, oh, that actually wasn't that sinister a thing. I mean, you know, I know people whose lives are like that.
Well, right. And so you're right that from that point of view, it was told in a very sinister way.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, it's like the sort of like the apocalypse on steroids for them, right? You know, that being put into that situation.
And so I don't know if this was a reference at all to what is it? Folk of the Fringe or Folk from the Fringe. I can't forget the Orson Scott Card, which has a preface, which basically Orson Scott Card is like, and I'm making a new LDS post-apocalyptic genre, basically, which was, you know, it was just bizarre. So it's like, you know, most of my knowledge of Mormons come from that book, the post-apocalyptic Mormon book, you know, from South Park and from Big Love. So I'm probably pretty accurate.
and the original Battlestar Galactica.
Yes. And this book, you know, a little bit. So,
well, I do have some Mormon friends and I did sing with a Mormon group for a little while, but I don't think that they taught me the secrets of their religion or whatever they may be.
But yeah, so there was there's a section here where it starts out to be only semi-sinister in the sense of what most people think of, like, you know, the bad parts of Mormonism might be, where it's, you know, the polyamory stuff or polygamy stuff. And you know, I think for, at least from the Bay Area, it's like, well, most people don't really care as long as it's consensual, right? Like, you know, it's portrayed as not being in the book in some cases. So, you know, that's the part where you're like, oh, well, that's they're hitting the bad section of what people think, you know, might be going on, but it's still not as bad as maybe the rape gangs in the book. As far as it, you know, the stuff that happens, it's still pretty bad. Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, she basically is like pretty appalled that Honus would ask her to be like the second wife.
Well, actually, I thought that was hilarious that she actually did sort of the what I would consider the realistic turnaround, where it's like, well, you know, there's so few people that I should have two wives, and she's like, shouldn't it be the other way around? You know, that it's like, you know, we should have, you know, every wife should have multiple husbands. And he's like, oh, well, I didn't mean that kind of weird stuff. And you know, there's even precedent for that. Like, even as far as Cozy Catastrophes go, it's like the Day of the Triffids, you know, they, it starts out as very early in that book. There's the, you know, where they say, well, you know, in order to repopulate the earth, it'll have to be both ways. You know, it's like, it'll basically just be like multiple wives, multiple husbands, that kind of stuff or something. And
it's like the end of Dr. Strangelove, where he's saying, yes, to repopulate the species, it'll have to be, you know, seven women for every man. It's just like, 7? Something like that. Suddenly they're all in favor of the apocalypse.
They're like, oh, okay, sounds good to me.
As long as I survive.
Yeah. People are, well, it's for the good of the species, people are willing to say until it goes up against what they don't want to do.
What is it, that episode of Futurama, right, where Fry is sentenced to death by Snoo Snoo, right? And what was his statement? That the spirit is willing, but the flesh is bruised and damaged.
Yeah, I think I'll agree that the hive section was one of my favorite ones. I mean, as far as my favorite scenes, it's like, that wasn't that, you know, usually in post-nuke books, I sort of like the, you know, combing through the wreckage, you know, that portion, you know, setting up your base, you know, finding what you could find and kind of boarding up the windows. And, you know, that's kind of the parts of the books I normally like. So,
right.
You know, I enjoyed those little subsections of the books, but this, the one thing that I thought was very different, you know, other than just the general, like, female perspective, was that it actually addresses stuff like, hey, women might get pregnant if they are on birth control. And so, you know, at the very beginning where, you know, Barry had mentioned in our offline chat, where it's sort of like, I was kind of confused why, you know, she had like 5 billion doses of birth control with her, like, you know,
a giant, like, backpack full of birth control. Right. Like, what's going on?
It's traveling,
like,
well, saleswoman.
It's like, cause she was a midwife by profession, you know, nurse midwife. So she's, you know, going to do that still and, you know, help out any women that that she finds, especially considering that it's mostly a death sentence now, you know, with whatever disease is going around.
Yeah, I mean, the lack of medical care plus the fact that all the babies are stillborn,
right,
you know, is causing big issues. So she's trying to address the pretext of this. So and so she's got this giant backpack full of birth control and, you know, posing as a man, she'll just barter for time with the women and then, you know, have to spend some time trying to convince the women that she's actually a woman.
Right.
Right. Without actually, you know, showing them her vagina or something. And, you know, then try and get them to take the birth control.
Which, unfortunately, is probably realistic too, or one of the women she kind of inadvertently rescues, you know, which she wasn't trying to, but then, you know, they chase track her back to the base. So she kind of shoots half of them kind of by reflex. And the one of the women just sort of like, I just want to die. Just, can you have something for that? And, you know, and instead of birth control. And she's like, you know, buck up, it'll be okay. And they're just like, yeah, no. And I think they just take off. We don't ever know what happens to them. Right. Like,
right. At some point she's just like, it's okay, I'm a woman. And that freaks her out even further.
Oh, at first. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's weird too, because not this book, but as far as like women characters in, well, not just many books, but, you know, particularly post-apocalyptic books in this case, like if they're there at all, they're very side characters or they're like objective characters, like, you know, I need to get back to my wife and kids. So I was trying to think, like, okay, so have I read any other post-apocalyptic books with strong female characters? And very oddly enough, probably the only other one that jumps to mind that actually has a strong female main character is someone from the Deathland series by James Axler from the 80s, which you would think would be like the worst pulp crap, you know, the stuff that I read as a teenager. And, you know, sure, half of it was very stereotypical, like, you know, boy, men, action kind of fantasy, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, one of the main characters is this female that basically holds her own. She's a main part of the group. And she also isn't just there to sleep with the protagonist of the book. You know, it's like kind of like the bridge crew, right? Where there's 3 or 4 main characters in the book and she's one of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when someone, you know, when her lover will come up and say something about like, hey, you know, women, ha ha ha, you just do what I say. She's like, what? She's like, I'll kick your ass. So it's like, you know, considering it was written in the 80s and it was kind of surprising in retrospect that, you know, she actually wasn't just a pushover.
Right. Okay. Well, moving on to the important questions. Was there tea? Well, she was hanging around with the Mormons most of the time, so I don't particularly remember any.
I believe tea was mentioned, but they don't drink it.
Yeah, like, she offered tea to the woman, and she's like, oh, I'm Mormon, I can't have that, basically. Like, she's like, oh, that's
got
right.
Got any cocoa?
That's right, yes. And then who would we be and who would we want to be? I'm going to add an additional general question. Which catastrophe do we like the best?
Like what kind of
yes.
like scenario? Yeah, there. I was thinking about that going, God, there's really not a lot of people that you want to be in this book. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess maybe the people at the very end of the book where she stumbles on, you know, that group that I think it was called Nowhere or something. I forget, or maybe that mm-hmm. was the name later, but where they're like, don't worry, you can leave when you want. We're not going to, you know, make you part of our forcible harem and, you know, whatever. And it would be awesome because you actually know stuff about medicine. And, you know, that those people, they're probably the only people that, you know, you wouldn't just cringe from even considering.
Wouldn't that be a sort of terrible world? It's just, you know, somebody walks into your home and you're just like, that's great. You can leave whenever you want. I'm not going to make you part of my harem.
Isn't that what I said to you when you walked in today?
You didn't, and that's terrifying.
Oh, I meant to. I guess my lips weren't moving.
Well, I guess that's better than the alternative.
Yes, that's true. So, yeah. Does anybody else have any people that they would actually want to be from the book? Or
no, I imagine that. I mean, you know, I could see some advantages to being part of a hive, I suppose, though many disadvantages.
Yeah, it would be one of the, I would not feel completely horrible, I guess, in that situation, as opposed to, the, you know, being in one of the gangs. Like, you know, you'd want to say that you were kind of like the main character where you're going around trying to rescue people. The more realistic thing is that you would be one of the first that were killed or would just not be.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'd be like the guy she takes the sailboat from in the beginning.
Oh, it's like, hey, I can help you out. She's like, no, I don't trust you. And that's it. You never see him again. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think I'd probably end up being, you know, realistically, I'd probably be one of the first people to die from this, you know, horrible disease. And then, you know, who I'd want to be is possibly like one of the first of the new children. You know, because I can't imagine the amount of coddling you would get.
Yeah. They're like, everyone's favorite.
Yeah.
Can I have another ice cream sundae?
There are no ice cream sundaes. We live in a post-apocalyptic hellscape.
Yeah. I will say the only thing that, you know, my nitpick brain, you know, occasionally did crop up where, you know, it's like, you know, oh, I wish I could listen to the CD player. It's like, oh, you know, and they did address it later. It's like, oh, we'll just get some rechargeable batteries and solar panels. And so like that did prop up where the guy did it. So I guess this was also an example of where the main character wasn't just like, oh, I figured everything out myself. It's like, you know, different people come up with different solutions.
Right. Social problem solving.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're also at a big disadvantage with this, you know, level of apocalypse, right? It's a pandemic that destroys 99% of the population. I mean, you've lost a lot of, you know, knowledge and intellectual.
Right. And that was one thing that actually, one thing I liked about another series I like is Survivors by Terry Nation, which is a TV series, but also a book that he wrote.
Terry Nation, the creator of the Daleks.
Exactly. And so.
And no other television series whatsoever.
Yes, Blake Seven. So there's the whole first part of that book is basically like, he's like, oh, this will be fine because, you know, there's plenty of stuff we can live off in cans. And there's a whole dialogue from a monologue actually from this guy that basically is like, nobody knows how to do anything anymore. He's like, we're dependent upon our industrial society where, you know, different industries do different things. And, you know, could you, you know, make your own clothes, make your own this and that. He's like, once we're out of that stuff, we're screwed until people learn how to do that stuff again, you know, for the long term.
And I've tried several times to get prepared for a disaster, and I've determined that my brain doesn't work very well in that mode because I just start gathering up random stuff to put in a backpack. And like, I had a friend of mine that is actually good at this come down, and I'm just like, let's see. Here's something. I'm not sure what it is. You know, we're going through my disaster pack, and I was, you know, it was basically the equivalent of, you know, oh, and here's a musical instrument. I might get bored. And,
it is important. You can have a skill for people.
Right, exactly. I don't know how to play it, but I could learn.
Yeah. Well, the good news is no one else probably know how to play it either, and therefore you'd be the best one on the planet.
Look, I can play the piano, so let me just cart this around with me. I've converted this piano into a vehicle that I could drive.
I have built a solar-powered keytar.
That would be awesome.
So yeah, of course, when I was a kid, I used to think, what kind of apocalypse would be the best? Like, you know, I was like, you know, post-nuke, you know, it's easier to say than post-apocalyptic, but, you know, all the radiation, all that stuff, not that great to deal with. So I used to, you know, of course, Night of the Walking Dead and stuff was another popular one when I was a kid. So I was like, yeah, that one, Dawn of the Dead, where you can live in a shopping mall and take whatever you want. You know, that one sounds good, except without the zombies, because that seems like a pain to deal with that.
Mine would be the one where just everybody vanishes except me.
Like The Quiet Earth.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the easiest one to deal with, except, you know, you kind of get very selfish in a way, and you're like, well, I want it to be... Oh,
but what are you saying? That's not a selfish fantasy at all, everybody else vanishing.
It's not, yeah. No. As long as you're with a few people that you like, then it's okay. Like, and
the real joke is you're going to be left with people that are you really don't like, and you have to figure out how to work together.
Like in this book, you know, where she's with the other LDS woman who is just, you know... She can't stand. She's like, you're boring after like 10 right. minutes. But
really hot. And she's bisexual.
But not the LDS woman. So, yes.
Yes. The LDS woman seems to be asexual.
Yeah.
They seem naive in terms of some subjects and not others. You know, it's like he did build like sort of the solar, you know, battery array so that they could watch DVDs or something, which was
right.
kind of neat. But then, you know. He kind of confides in the midwife that, like, you know, I'm really having a, you know, hard time, you know, sleeping with my wife.
Right.
And usually once you get married, this sort of thing is, you know, overcome already. And she kind of goes into some, you know, fairly frank talk about it.
Dude, as we may have mentioned, this is not a book to necessarily listen to with your young children or with the windows rolled down.
Yes. As I usually do with, you know, listening to it in the car with the windows down. Not that yes. I'm, you know, listening, forcing young children to listen to my book, books that have been selected.
That's good. It's good that you said that.
Yes. So I was also spending some time thinking, like, what would be, like, my first major plan if, you know, the apocalypse really did go down and I did survive. And I think that would be to run down to my local library and basically steal the seed bank they have there.
They have a seed bank there.
Yeah, we have a seed bank at the Mountain View Public Library, and I'm assuming no one else.
In the case of a disaster, Barry intends to abuse resources.
I'll leave my library card on the counter.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was funny too, where it pretty quickly becomes the nobody's here, nobody owns anything except, you know, kind of where you are. And when she goes to the LDS town, it's like, well, you better ask the bishop whether you can use a storehouse, and she just like. Seriously, you still are going to pretend you're playing house, basically. And yeah, I could see that happening for sure in a community where there's, like, you know, enough people. But usually it's you'd kind of hope that it's sort of the group trying to share the resources in an equal fashion, as opposed to just sort of like, you know, I'm in charge and you got to do what I say. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's sort of like one of the other weird things I was thinking about in the book is, you know, there's so few people left and there's so much stuff left behind, right? You know, like, you would think that, like, snowmobiles would just be everywhere.
Well, right. That was like, I was thinking, this is America here, so there has to be a lot of guns around, right? And, you know, they were having trouble, like Roxanne was freaking out, you know, trying to find the gun in the guy's house. And sure, it makes sense. If you think there's a gun there, you should just spend a while looking for it. And hey, pay it off. But you kind of think in a lot of areas, it shouldn't be difficult to find guns at random people's houses, I would think.
I think getting to them might be an issue. You know, a lot of, you know, most guns have gun locks or if you go to your local police station, they're going to be locked up. But
you kind of think, okay, where's your big five? At least I can get, you know, a rifle or something. You know?
Yeah.
It's not the first book I've read that used that concept. And so I think it might've been a narrative device. So it wasn't just like everyone didn't have a machine gun or something like that, like, you know, or maybe it just was the, like, okay, they're going to be locked up. So it also starts, you know, an indeterminate, you know, couple weeks ish time after the main character wakes up. So it may have cut out the, you know, month of the timer
looting.
Yeah. The massive looting to, like, you know, remove so that there weren't just stuff everywhere. It's like all the cans have been eaten and that kind of stuff. So, you know,
pork and beans.
Oh, damn. I forgot to bring my pork and beans over.
And another inside joke by Kevin.
All right. Well, okay. Well, I guess that a side effect of the fever has been general delusion, but I think it's time for us to either all join nice communities or find a hive. So until next time, this has been Sci-Fi.
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 I have two hives in my backyard.
Bragger.